Hey guys, this is H-Town Wheelhouse. It is July 10th, and today we will be joined by a special guest, Chris Castelloni. He is a Detroit Tigers commentator and a 10,000-plus follower Twitter personality. He is known for his boisterous and sometimes outlandish takes for the Detroit Tigers and constantly expresses his frustration and keys to making the Tigers a more valid ball club in the MLB. So today we'll be talking to him. We're going to ask him how he got started. We're also going to talk to him about his second half predictions, what he thinks about Matt Boyd possibly coming to Houston, where he thinks the Astros may fall, and in the last segment, maybe some advice he has for the Detroit Tigers front office, and does he consider the Astros the top example in the major leagues of how to build a strong, solid team from the ground up. You can find him on Twitter at Castellani2014, that's Castellani 2014 at Twitter. Again, this is H-Town Wheelhouse. Thank you for joining our podcast today. Up next, my interview with Mr. Chris. Good afternoon.
Hey.
Hey, man. How's it going?
It's going well, man. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Sorry about that. When I hooked you in, my headset was not working. Now you're going through my headset. All right, man. Okay, how was work today?
It was fine, man. Yeah. Honestly, I've had to turn down several podcast requests because I've just been really busy. So
I understand.
It's been nice to kind of slide one in here, and I'm looking forward to it, man, and I appreciate you sending me the questions in advance as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we are joined today by, now, make sure I say your name right, Castelloni?
Castellani.
Castellani, okay. So this is Chris Castellani. He is a Twitter personality. He is most famous from, and most recently known for his how you say valuation of the Detroit Tigers and the season that they are going through right now. They're having a rough season, and I reached out to him on Twitter and he agreed to come on. So I appreciate you coming on. In the intro, I told everybody where they could find you on Twitter. So I just want to let you know that. Hopefully you'll get some more followers. We'll get some more listeners, but hey, let me just ask you this starting out. How did you get started in doing the commentary and kind of being a personality? And also tell me, like, what it's been like growing up a Detroit Tigers fan.
Well, I mean, I guess to answer your first question, it started, I guess, really kind of back in 2016, when Vine was still around. I would kind of, after every single game, I'd upload kind of like these short, you know, 7.5 second recaps, just talking about real quick thoughts on the game. And, you know, obviously Vine was discontinued, and really all I just wanted to talk about the Tigers. I wanted to talk about baseball. I wanted to open up, you know, whatever platform would allow me to do that. I considered a few options. I considered YouTube, but you know, the Vines from the year before had kind of gotten, you know, not much of a following, but there was a strong, you know, a somewhat of a core there, and
right.
I felt like there was a bit of an audience, and so I moved it to Twitter, and it turned out to be, you know, you could call it bad luck or good luck. I mean, you know, depending on who you ask. I mean, bad luck in the sense that, you know, the team was terrible, but good luck in the sense that it was, you know, 2 years ago was the worst team the Tigers had had in well over a decade, and it provided some good content for sure. And since then, things have kind of continued to flutter under the guise of what is supposed to be this Detroit Tigers rebuild, that so far is off to kind of a rough start, I'll say. But no, it was, and I think kind of where a lot of the frustration comes from, as well as my love of the Tigers, going back to the second question you asked, you know, I grew up, you know, starting in 2006 when they made the World Series, and really
right.
Every year for the next 10 years or so, you went into every single baseball season maybe not thinking that this team was the favorite to win the World Series, but at least believing they got a shot. And as a fan, that's so valuable, and you expect more, and you grow to believe that this team can be better. And so it's not like, you know, there's other teams in the city that I root for, but I've never seen have success. I've seen the Detroit Tigers have incredible success. I've seen them play in 2 World Series. I've seen them win 4 AL Central championships. I've seen them have Cy Young winners and MVPs. You know, what we witnessed from 06 to 2016, really, or, you know, maybe 2014, what would have been considered the golden age of Detroit Tigers baseball if they would have been able to get over the hump, and they never did. And it's kind of led to a lot of the fan frustration, which I think has started to come out in a lot of my videos. And obviously the team itself is underperforming, but, you know, and you're an Astros fan, so you kind of understand. You're at a point now where wins and losses with the roster you have aren't necessarily as important. What you're wanting to see is improvement by the young guys and improvement in the farm system and belief that the front office knows what they're doing. And, you know, we're several years into this rebuild that a lot of people have argued, are we 4 years in? Are we 3 years in?
Right.
But either way, the growth in the farm system, as well as some of the trades they've made, they're yet to kind of reap the rewards of those, if there are any rewards at all. So that's kind of the frustration has led to.
I hear you. And when you look at the rotation that the Tigers had at one point of Scherzer, Verlander, Porcello, and just like the power arms they had. And, you know, Miguel was you're really at the height of his career. You know, he won the Triple Crown a few years ago. I can only imagine, you know, I mean, the only other time the Astros really, I mean, now the Astros had success, you know, in 80, 86, late 90s when Randy Johnson came over. We got the rental and we just didn't get the job done. And I was talking with the local broadcaster actually today on the phone, and he said, you know, up until 2017, the Astros were the team that just kind of broke your heart at the end of the season. And someone had mentioned a while back, they were like, man, Detroit had this lineup. It's almost like if you parallel it to another league, like you had the NBA when you had Westbrook and you had Harden and you had Durant, and they couldn't get it done. And, you know, and it's like, it so much goes into it. I think on a, you know, from a baseball standpoint, where, you know, the Astros in 05 had that pitching staff.
Right.
I mean, but their offense was the worst offense batting average wise, one of the weakest offenses to ever make a World Series. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that they fell 4-0 to the White Sox, who weren't much better, it wasn't surprising, because as Houston fans, we were like, okay, here comes another disappointment, you know, and it's just, I can imagine how frustrating it is. And of course, not being in Detroit, you know, when Verlander came here, I know that kind of sends shockwaves through the MLB world, the way it happened, the way it went down. But there was a lot of people outside of Detroit. I don't know how Detroit felt, but there were a lot of people that felt, oh, Verlander's on the decline. He's, you know, he's not doing so well. He's not himself. And he came here, and Brent Strom has worked his magic. And up until recently, you know, he has struggled this year. You know, he's already given up 29 long balls.
Yeah.
I think 30 in the first half. But yeah, that's interesting. The Tigers and the Astros have a lot of similarities. Now, of course, you guys obviously are more storied in that you're more historic. You've been around a lot longer.
Yeah.
But if you take the last 20, 30 years, you know, even into the 80s, there were some really good Detroit Tiger teams that I remember seeing on TV. So I'm assuming you've been a Tigers fan your entire life.
Oh yeah. I mean, absolutely. Growing up around here, you kind of have to be. And it took me, I mean, baseball, I would say in the last probably 6-7 years, really, in the middle of high school is when it kind of really became my number one love as far as sports go. But I mean, it was for a short time, you know, at least in my earlier years, you know, baseball would have been kind of an afterthought if not for the fact that the Tigers were so competitive. I mean, even in years where they may be disappointed, there was always reasons to come to the ballpark, whether it be Verlander's pitching every fifth day or Miguel Cabrera is going to be in the lineup. There was always something new and exciting.
Right.
And even if it wasn't new, it was at least fun. And things have definitely changed. And
no. Yeah. And point.
Well, you know, I've actually learned a lot about what's going on with the Tigers from your commentary.
Well, thanks, man.
You know, at times it is absolutely, I mean, sometimes it's like I just want to go there for the entertainment value. I think your takes are genius. Now, I don't know if you prep those, if those just flow off the top of your head. But just the way you flow through the information, I mean, you pick the player of the game. You pick, even when they have an abysmal game, you're like, well, I guess we got to give it to Matt Boyd, you know, or you know, and it's just really fun to listen to that. And, you know, I congratulated you when you got the 10,000 followers. I thought that was cool. I'm at like 555 followers, and I thought I had kind of hit the big time. You know, I'm like, hey, I've got 500,000 people that are following me.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, I really appreciate it a lot. You know, it's been great, the response that people have had. I mean, what's been crazy is I didn't know how much it would grow, but I always thought if it did grow, it would just be a Michigan, Detroit kind of thing.
Right.
The fact that it's spread to, you know, people in Cleveland and people in Houston has really been awesome. And as far as prep, you know, in a 9-inning game, especially with a team that's this bad, where the games are often decided, I mean, in the early innings, you're kind of able to map out what, at least an idea of what you're going to say. You know, it's only 2 minutes and 20 seconds. So
right.
It's not like you have to come up with an entire thesis or anything. You can just, it is kind of off the cuff. And I think the thing I've always said is that 2 minutes and 20 seconds, that's my window. That's me getting out the frustrations of the day, the frustrations of the Tigers. And I think one of the misconceptions, and I've said this many times, but I think it's worth reiterating, is like, I've never, one time in my life, I've gone to bed angry after a Detroit Tigers game, and that was a playoff game in 2013 against the Red Sox. But besides that, like, once the dust settles, once I'm done with my post game, even if I didn't have my post game, like, my level of anger for the game itself, the organization itself, ceases, you know, pretty much immediately. You know, you can't let that stuff stick with you for that long, or you'll go crazy. So,
no, right.
You know, it's a lot of fun. I love doing it. I love doing, you know, the broad humor, the exaggerating stuff. I think it's great. But I like to have, you know, some level of insight. And, you know, one thing I'll say, and I think part of the reason why these have spread to other sports towns is that some of the most enjoyment I get watching these games is from watching other teams and seeing not only the players on the field who you enjoy watching. I mean, it's part of the reason why I love watching the All-Star game too, is you get to see guys you might not necessarily see, but you see also just the kind of the well-oiled machine that is some of these organizations, and it makes you envious, and it makes you semi hopeful, but also cautious that you believe that or hope that your team can one day get to the point where they're running that smoothly, and it makes you, you know, miss the days of meaningful baseball. You know?
No, yeah, definitely. And yeah, I was gonna say, you know, I guess, and one of the things that kept me going back is I noticed you know you have this healthy respect for baseball. You're just like, man, let me tell you, if the Astros pick up steam, or look, the Astros are playing like this and they're hurt, I mean, this is scary. And you know, to me, a good, I guess what's hard for me getting into this, getting into doing podcasts, you know, I run a page called Stros 411 on Facebook. My slogan is always positive, always Astros. So we don't let people slander the players, all that stuff. I try to make it like a family friendly thing. And so I've kind of got that thing going. I've got podcasts I'm trying to do. But I guess at the end of the day, what I think really, really makes me enjoy your stuff is that you are able to objectively look at it. Your passion for your Tigers comes through, and your frustration is really kind of like, it's like justified, you know, it's like righteous anger. You know, I remember the only thing I was happy about the Astros losing 100 games 3 years in a row was I was going to games and I was getting 10 games for $20. I mean,
yeah,
that was awesome. I mean, I knew the Astros were going to get rung up 12-2, but I got to go to a baseball game for like $2.
Yeah. No, I get you. And look, I Comerica's going to have to start doing that too. I mean, if you're going to put out a product that's this poor, that's going to have to happen. You know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, you've even seen it in like in Oakland, and I think they did it again this year. They have like a pass thing where like you pay, and the Astros actually did it 2 years ago, where like you pay like $30-something for the month or whatever it was, and they let you in each game. And of course, they didn't give you your tickets until the day of the game, but you had a ticket to each game, however many games you wanted to go through Monday through Friday. So, you know, Major League Baseball does a good job of that. Yeah. So, man, that's, you know, that's awesome hearing your background, hearing your passion and how your analysis of baseball is actually able to come through. And that's what's, you know, fun for me to listen to.
Well, thank you so much.
Appreciate yeah, definitely. That. I want to ask you a couple things. And so we've actually got a couple options. We can stop, go into another segment, or we can just keep rolling if you feel like it's going good.
Yeah, it's up to you, man. I'm fine. Keep staying rolling, honestly.
Okay, let's do that. Excellent. So now we are coming into the second half of the season. Now, I'm not going to say, hey, what do you think the prediction for the Tigers is in the second half as far as record, but what do you think the chances are that the Detroit Tigers lose one or a couple of their pitchers here by the trade deadline? And
High. You know, at least I think there's three pieces that have really since probably the beginning of the season, people have known these guys were going to be on the move at some point, or, you know, at least in discussion to be on the move. And that's Nick Castellanos, the right fielder, Shane Green, the all-star closer, and Matt Boyd, who's been, you know, very, very solid starting pitcher for them this year. I wouldn't say he's an ace, but he's been their ace. Strike with just having a breakout year as far as strikeouts are concerned. I think the possibility of two of those guys going is very high. Three, we'll see. There's Boyd and Green are obviously kind of the top two prized possessions. Boyd, very appealing to people right now because of the strikeout numbers. You know, he's a good pitcher. He's not going to excel, but there are teams like the Astros, I believe, and like the Yankees and you know, the Red Sox possibly even, that kind of have those front of the line guys. They have those number one starters, the number two starters, but are kind of looking for that solid guy in the back end of the rotation.
Right.
That can solidify rotation and be somebody that is a really good number four or number three pitcher. And Boyd can be that guy.
Now,
I don't know if I like him as much as some other people do. Right. I think he's had a very good year. But him and Green are going to be the two most prized possessions. Teams dish out a lot more for pitchers than they do for position players at the deadline. It's always been that way.
Well, see, here's the thing I like about Matt Boyd. It's kind of like, of course, I know they're different pitchers because Boyd's more of a power pitcher. But when the Astros picked up Wade Miley,
there's similarities.
Yeah, there. I mean, I basically put all my eggs in that basket. So I write for a website called Climbing Taos Hill, and I've been doing a series on Wade Miley called The Miley Chronicles. And I've really enjoyed doing that because nobody else is writing about Wade Miley. They're writing about Bregman and, you know, Altuve and Springer and Brantley. And I was like, you know, I want to latch onto this guy because I think he's really going to do something well, because I've seen what Brent Strom has done with all of our pitchers, what he did with Keiko, what he did with Morton, you know, so on and so forth. I think Matt Boyd has an even greater chance of replicating what you saw out of Morton, simply because they took Morton, that was damaged goods and injury prone, to be in something, to where I think Matt Boyd is something, and they can maybe take a pitch out of his arsenal or change something in his routine to where it takes him to the next level. On top of that, imagine that strikeout ratio backed by the offense the Houston Astros have. I really like Matt Boyd. I know everybody wants Scherzer, everybody wants Bumgarner. I mean, everybody wants the big name. You know, we're in the age of the big name free agency, right?
Right. Yeah.
And Scherzer, I don't think is a realistic possibility.
No, I don't think he's. A couple weeks ago, I would have said yes. Yeah, but they've started to win a lot of games, and at the end of the day, he's their guy.
Yeah,
they just lost Harper. Scherzer's there to stay.
Yeah, I believe Scherzer's there. I think Madison Bumgarner might be an outside chance. I think Stroman poses some like clubhouse locker room and like injury issues. I really, really am real high on Matt Boyd right now. I know a lot of Astros Twitter or Astros Nation are like, I don't know about Matt Boyd. But my question to you is this: Do you think that, because I know that Tigers, I read an article, were talking to the Astros last year about y'all's right fielder. And the price was really high. Like, they wanted Kyle Tucker. Do you think they still want a Kyle Tucker for Matt Boyd?
Well, yes. And that's the reason why, if I had to guess, you know, will the Astros get Boyd? I would say probably not, because I have no doubt the Astros are going to get a starting pitcher at the deadline. But the rumor was last year with Castellanos and this year that Al Avila is kind of, you know, poking them to see if they can get Kyle Tucker in that deal. And I don't think the Astros are going to give Tucker away for Boyd. Now, if the Tigers threw Castellanos or Shane Green and made a kind of a package deal, then maybe the Astros would pull the trigger. You know, like I said, Boyd's a good pitcher. He'll give you innings. He's been a strikeout machine this year, but and obviously the strikeouts make him someone that's going to be very appealing. But the thing is, the Astros, like I said, they're going to get their guy. The Astros don't need Matt Boyd. They want Matt Boyd. But there's other pitchers they could acquire at the deadline that I think could be just as effective. Maybe not so much with the strikeouts, but, you know, we've seen what they've done with so many different pitchers that I have no doubt if they were to get a lesser quality guy, they'd be able to turn him into a legit number three, number four. But the thing is, this is a bigger deal, in my opinion, for the Tigers, because if the Tigers want to get this rebuild on track, they have to start hitting some home runs with these trades. You know, the Verlander deal is a toss-up, but I would say thus far has been underwhelming. The J.D. Martinez and Justin Upton trades were disasters. They need to get this right, which is why I don't blame them for having a high asking price for Matt Boyd. I don't see the Astros necessarily taking the bait. I could be wrong. Look, we still got another week or two. If Boyd goes out after the All-Star break and he's dealing, it could be a different story. But, like, the Astros have done such a good job of developing guys in the farm system. And by all accounts right now, Kyle Tucker has the potential to be possibly a generational talent in the outfield. And Boyd, at his best, I mean, on his best day, is like an okay number three. I think the possibility of that, I think that would seem like almost a lopsided trade, especially considering the Tigers desperately need a big time bats in their farm system. And I don't know if the Astros would be willing to give that away.
Yeah, that's the thing. Part of me says, hey, if you can get Kyle Tucker for a larger, you know, big ace, I honestly wouldn't mind. But, you know, you saw what J.D. Martinez did since he's left the Houston Astros. You know, that just didn't work out well. And, you know, the Astros haven't really given away much recently other than J.D. Martinez. But a lot of times when these guys do leave, it is always a risk. And I have to continue to trust our front office. Now, with that in mind, and of course, I know you and I are fans, we're commentators. We like to write about sports. We're passionate. But if there's one piece of advice that you could give the Tigers front office, what would it be? Or would you even dare go there?
Well, I mean, if they asked, I'd give it to them. No, I guess, you know, my advice would be, I think, because I pay a lot of attention to baseball, obviously, and what other teams have done that have made them successful. And I think the Astros have had this unbelievable or continue to have this unbelievable analytics, sabermetrics, and video department that has, you know, fixed the careers of several of their pitchers. I mean, there was a story about Verlander about a year ago where he said, the second I got to Houston, they showed me some film that we didn't have in Detroit that allowed me to fix my slider, you know, essentially right away. And to me, that the Tigers have toyed with the idea of really expanding the analytics department, but it's something they never had with Dombrowski. They kind of have it now, but they really need to expand it, because at the end of the day, if they're not going to spend money getting big time free agents, at least for the near future, they need to start spending money on stuff that's going to be able to allow them to maximize players' potential. So I think having a solid analytics department can go a long way. I think it helped carry, you know, I think the Astros back in 2015, you look at that roster, that was a young roster that really wasn't, with the exception of some of the young guys that I brought up, wasn't that great, but they got to where they were. They made it into the playoffs because they got the most out of their players. You know, that was a team that struck out a lot. They hit a lot of home runs. You know, the Tigers don't really have that right now. They don't have that strong. They're not sure if they want to kind of go back to the old-fashioned way of baseball, or if they want to advance and go the more analytical route, which I think would serve them well. And the other thing too, I guess this is more for something I lament now that the good old days of Tiger baseball have at least, you know, gone away for a while. And that's that, you know, the Tigers for several years, I mean, maybe even more, but for several years had top five starting pitching in baseball and a top five lineup in baseball. But they insisted every year that the lineup would, that the bullpen would just kind of fix itself. And okay, that is something that other teams haven't believed in. Even you look at the Red Sox, who are run by Dave Dombrowski now, they're doing the exact same thing. Last year, they had Kimbrel and Joe Kelly and some guys who stepped up, and that they Cora, once they got to the postseason, used some of the starters out of the bullpen. But you look at them this year, it's the same way. Really good rotation, loaded offensively. It's a garbage bullpen. And that's one thing that you can't – you need actual arms. You need a manager who's going to be able to manage the situation, which is something I don't think the Tigers have had in a while. I don't think Gardenhire's terrible. I think he would show his weakness a lot more if they were playing meaningful games right now.
Well, I guess when you and I were growing up, when we were younger, I mean, I'm assuming I've got a few years on you, I'm sure, because I'm in my early 40s. But even when you were growing up, or even when I was growing up, to me, pitching has become more of a chess match than a checkers game, because, you know, gone are now. I mean, you know, the Verlanders and the Coles and the Scherzers, you know, Clayton Kershaw, the bigger, more sturdy arms, you know, the more of the more thoroughbred type pitchers.
Yeah.
You don't really have that anymore. And now it's like they analyze things so much. That's why, you know, I kind of freaked out when I was like, wait, Major League Baseball is considering telling the pitcher that he has to face a minimum of three batters or something. And I'm just like, but that's what baseball's become. And if you don't have a substantial middle relief staff, I mean, you're almost already fighting from behind. Even before that game starts 0-0, you're already down 5-0 just because you know that your arms aren't reliable enough to get through even the top four of a lineup that may be weak, at least those top four hitters. And regardless, you know, that's one of the things, I don't know if you, I'm sure you picked up on it with the Astros this year. At the beginning of the season, it was their 7, 8, 9 hitters that were keeping things going through all these injuries. And it was like top to bottom. And it's like, man, I honestly cannot wait for Correa to get back. I cannot wait for this team to be fully healthy. I just read this morning, McHugh is, you know, much better. Joe Smith is looking to get, you know, reactivated. Brad Peacock reactivated. And so who knows? I'm excited about the second half of the season. Do you see the Astros or the Yankees coming out on top in the American League? And I know I'm leaving out a couple other teams, but I'm assuming they're 1 and 1A.
Yeah, they are. I mean, look, there's other teams playing good baseball right now. Obviously the Twins have had a very good first half, but the Central is a pretty easy division to navigate through, though it's gotten better with the White Sox being more competitive. But I think I don't trust the Twins bullpen, and I think at a certain point, some guys who are having unbelievable years like Jorge Polanco and Jake Odorizzi are going to start to come back down to earth a little bit. I agree. I think and I talked about the Red Sox already, competitive team, but that bullpen's a disaster. Even if they make a move at the deadline, I don't see them being able to fix themselves. I think at full health or close to full health, I think the Astros are better than anyone. Now the Yankees, I have really done a remarkable job. I was pretty low on Aaron Boone as a manager last season. And I'm still not sure from a strategic standpoint how good he is, but you need to be doing a pretty good job to be able to navigate through the amount of injuries they've had, and the fact that they've continued to just have this next man up mentality shows, you know, that it's a good clubhouse, and the fact that it's a deep farm system. They've been able to call guys up similar to what the Astros have been able to do. The one thing about the Yankees that I, and the reason why I give the Astros an advantage over them is, and obviously this is subject to change with the deadline coming up, but the Yankees last season, obviously they won 100 games, but I won't say they fell apart, but the reason why they weren't able to overtake that division, the reason why the Red Sox kind of were looking up at the Red Sox all year, is that the Yankees lacked a real number one. You know, for the longest time, for the first half of that season, Severino was dealing, and he was going to be the ace. He kind of fell apart, and they never really had anybody to kind of take that mantle. As much as, you know, it is much more of a chess match, the pitching in the major leagues, especially once you get to the postseason, you got to have that anchor. You got to have that number one who's going to be able to give you 6-7 innings in a playoff start. I don't know if the Yankees have that. Like I said, subject to change. But the Astros, we know, do. I say this as a Tigers fan, obviously, so I'm a little bit biased. But I don't even if the Yankees were to make a huge move and get some, you know, a Stroman or even a Bumgarner, I think you're going to have trouble beating Verlander twice in a 7-game series and beating Cole twice in the 7-game series. You're going to have to win, you know, probably 2 or 3 of those games. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it. So I give the Astros the advantage, but if the Yankees come back at full health, we'll see. That is still a really dangerous team that plays at a dangerous park, and they are experienced. So I would be shocked if it's anything else than those two teams in the ALCS.
Yeah, I just, I was telling some of my Yankee fan friends on Twitter, I said, you know, if you thought the last ALCS where we played 2 years ago was exciting, I think this year is going to be even more exciting just because it's going to come down to key defensive plays. And, you know, that right there in that series, it really did not come down to offense. It came down to defense. It came down to those, you know, the key throw of Bregman throwing home. Whoever it was, I forget who threw the outfield and threw it home, and, you know, Altuve scored. I mean, there were just key defensive mishaps on New York's side. You know, baseball, I mean, you have to be real careful because I know, you know, hardcore Yankee fan wants to say, we're going to take you. Hardcore Astro fan says, we're going to take you. But baseball has, like, this ability to take any expectation you have and completely crushing it in a moment's notice.
I think baseball – well, obviously hockey is the outlier. But besides hockey, I think baseball is the only sport where – or not the only sport, but, you know, probably the biggest culprit of the best team doesn't always win. I mean, because you can go a week where you're just not hitting. It happens in the regular season, and sometimes a lot of times it can just happen in the postseason. And that really is an interesting point you bring up. Because I'm thinking back to that series. You also in game one you had Marwin Gonzalez throwing a runner out at the plate. Springer had some big plays in center. So yeah, that will make a difference. And if that's the case, I like the Astros. I think they're so sound defensively. Obviously the lineup itself is impressive, but I think they've been so smart with a lot of the free agent moves they've made. Even some of the lesser bats in that lineup make such a big impact. Guys like Josh Reddick, Mariznick, who has been a lot of fun to watch this year. I would give them the advantage, but we'll see. I mean, a lot of things can happen in baseball.
Okay, so I'm gonna throw a few buy or sell questions at you.
Let's do it.
Okay, buy or sell, Yordan Alvarez puts himself in contention for Rookie of the Year.
Buy. I mean, he's got a lot of ground to pick up. Obviously, he missed, but didn't get called up until, what was it? It was May or June, I believe.
It was June,
June. But look.
June 9th, I believe.
Yeah, you know, I think it's right because I think it was my birthday when he got called up. look, at a certain point, he'll have to adjust. You know, guys will get used to seeing pitchers will get used to seeing him. He's got a lot of ground to make up, but I think this year, which was a year where we kind of thought there would be some big time breakout rookies, there hasn't necessarily been. There's been a lot of good rookies in the American League, but Alvarez is going to benefit from the fact that he plays on an elite team. People are going to see him a bunch. The guy's got a ton of power. We'll see. I wouldn't necessarily say he's the favorite by any means, but I think by the end of the year, he'll be in the running for sure. You have some guys like Brandon Lau, Michael Chavis, right, who's had a very good year, but we'll see. And we've seen obviously before Astros like Correa and Springer who have had big time rookie seasons. So this is just another in a long kind of assembly line of really good athletes that the Astros have had.
Okay, buy or sell? Gerrit Cole signs a multi-year extension with the Houston Astros this offseason.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards selling there just because and the one thing you can't – that's so hard to kind of nail down with any free agent signing is emotion. How attached is a guy to a certain place? You know, would Gerrit Cole take a potential – potentially take less money – to play for the Astros as opposed to another team? We don't know. I just think, right, Cole is as appealing a starting pitcher. When he's on, he's a top five arm in baseball. I think someone is going to throw, and I like Gerrit Cole a lot, I do, but someone's going to throw a ridiculous amount of money at him, and I don't think it's money that the Astros want or necessarily need to spend. As great as Cole's been, and he's been, he kind of plateaued a little bit, it seemed, in Pittsburgh. He has gone to another level in Houston and shown that he has ace potentials. He's going to want to get, I think he believes he could get, Greinke money, and so we'll see. And that's the Astros really have not been one to hand out those type of deals, but maybe that'll
right. Well, no, and I think what helps Cole, and tell me if you agree with this, I think what helps Cole are the struggles that Verlander's had lately. Yeah. Three of Verlander's last six starts, he's given up three home runs.
Yeah.
And I think that because now it's almost like, wait, who's the ace?
Yeah.
Is it Verlander? Of course, everybody's going to say it's Verlander just because of his, he's the elder statesman, yada, yada, yada. But man, Cole has really gone. And dude, I don't know if you've seen any of the highlights or watching any of the games, but man, when he gets behind an account or an umpire doesn't give him a close call, man, he rears back and throws hundos and it's like he takes his anger out on the strike zone.
And that's something that's something he struggled with a bit in Pittsburgh. And obviously when your team is being successful and your team is winning, it lightens the mood a lot, but he was kind of, I just from what I remember, prone to being a bit of a head case, and I think he would get almost maybe too fastball reliant, and to the point where, nowadays things have changed where 2-0 count is not necessarily a fastball count. But he's had that fastball as such a weapon all season, and really, the last couple of years. And I think instead of, kind of having, breakdowns on the mound, I think he's kind of, like you said, taking it out on the next pitch and gotten ready and gotten himself settled in. And I think he's matured a lot, and it's going to make him even more appealing come the off season. And like I said, if they win a World Series, it could be tough for him to turn down a deal from the Astros, but so you never know.
Right. Okay. Buy or sell. And this is Detroit Tigers focus. Detroit Tigers get back to a World Series before the Chicago White Sox.
Sell. And it's sell. It's simply a part of it is that, I've been very critical of the Tigers rebuild and I'll continue to be. I mean, look, it's another misconception about my videos is that I come on here or I use my platform and I make these videos with the, wanting or hoping that I can see something that makes me angry. That's not the case. Like if something goes right, man, I'm more than happy to say, man, this is great. I think they're on the right track. But, for the last several years, I've been extremely impressed with how the White Sox have gone about their rebuild. And I think that was an organization that obviously they won it all in 2005. They got back to the World Series in 2008 – or not World Series, I'm sorry, but to the postseason in 2008. Had a solid core there with Canerco and Creedy and Burley, Bobby Jenks, some really solid Alexi Ramirez who was there for a minute. Some good players. But then they got to a point where they were just kind of drifting, and they went for it a bit, I think, after the 2014 offseason where they went for Samardzija and Adam LaRoche and
right.
That didn't work out. And after that, they kind of realized, all right, we got to blow this thing up. And I think what they've gotten in some of these trades has been remarkable. I'm really high on them. I think that's a team that, but in 2 years, will be competing for an American League pennant.
I gotta
believe that they'll get back there before the Tigers do at this point.
Okay, and actually, one more buy or sell. Okay. Let's predict and say that Verlander signs another contract when this one's up, and so he stays with the Astros another 3 or 4 years. Verlander goes into the Hall of Fame as a Detroit Tiger. Buy or sell?
Yeah, you know, I am going to buy that. I've gone back. I genuinely do believe that his heart, you know, as far as that is concerned, is with Detroit. Even if he wins another Cy Young in Houston, this is a guy who was so young when he was drafted. He was a part of the organization for 13 years, you know. So
right.
I do believe he'll go in as a Tiger. But with that said, if he were to go in to the Hall of Fame as an Astro, I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't be upset. I mean, the Astros are responsible for, I won't necessarily say turning his career around, but at least improving his career or extending his career. And they got him a ring. It was the first time, really. I mean, even when the Tigers were good, they didn't really have a good defense behind Verlander. This is the first time Verlander got there and he had, you know, an actual shortstop with range and actual good outfielders who could throw guys out, and you know, if they weren't just hitters who got placed in the outfield,
right?
They couldn't play anywhere else. You know, it wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, some of his best years have been with Houston, but I said it wouldn't surprise me. It would surprise me, but it wouldn't upset me.
Right? No,
it upset some other people.
No, that makes sense. You know, and you know, we kind of had our similar conundrum. I think when Nolan Ryan went in as a Ranger, with all he accomplished late in his career, I wasn't surprised. I mean, I think I was shocked because we associated him with the Houston Astros, but if you know the history there, and they weren't willing to pay him at the time, that was when the $1 million contract started coming around, and the owner at the time wasn't willing to give him that big contract. So he went to Texas. I guess the writing was on the wall, but when it actually happened, almost like you got rejected. Like you asked the girl to the prom and she said no.
Yeah.
And, but you know, he has had a longer career. I think the only way really Verlander flips to a Houston uniform going into the Hall of Fame is if he pitches literally the rest of his career in Houston and he pitches till he's 45 or does a Nolan Ryan type stint in the major leagues. But there's something to be said about kind of where your heart is and where you're endeared to. And I think too, I love seeing him go back the very first time and just see the emotion on his face without him really showing much. And so soul into those teams. And I know he did too. And like you said, it's really hard to be an ace when you don't have a group behind you, you know. Shoot, my little league team this year, my son's team, we were the Pirates and we were like we weren't the late 90s Pirates. We were the early 2000 Pirates, and where our pitchers would grind and boy, you know, it would be like one error after another. But it wasn't until the end of the season we caught steam, but you know, our pitchers. So at all levels, no matter where you are, when you don't have that backing, it's really hard. And that's what I think is amazing about what he accomplished in Detroit and how well he was able to do despite of his deficiencies. Yeah, so, well, hey man, you know, I do appreciate your time. This was an awesome, awesome conversation.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
And everyone, this is H-Town Wheelhouse, and I am on with Chris Castellani.
Oh, yeah,
Did I say that right? Okay, good. Chris Castellani, famous Twitter Tiger savant. He is numero uno when it comes to all things Detroit Tigers baseball. And I want to thank him for joining us. Chris, tell us where you can find you on Twitter.
You can find me at Twitter at Castellani 2014. That's at CastellaniI2014. Follow me on there. You'll find links to some of my other social media platforms as well. So I really appreciate you having me on, man. It's been a really busy time. Like I said, I've had to turn down a few other podcast offers, but it's been a weird week. I've had some shifts at work, and I was able to kind of fit this one in. I'm happy to do it, man. It's been a lot of fun.
Definitely. Well, hey, let's do this. We'll talk, you know, via private message on Twitter. Let's reconnect when it's around playoff time. We got the playoff seedings, and see if we got some predictions we can talk about. And, you know, maybe we can talk about Matt Boyd and if he's going to pitch game four of the ALDS for the Astros.
Sounds all right. Like a plan. Thank you so much.
All right, Chris. I'll tell you no matter.